If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's getting acquainted with the companies, really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
And this was kind of the big social media story in the news. Twitter said that it is based on the behavior of an account. So if an account looks particular...
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Welcome to Monday afternoon in the city of Chicago. Thanks very much for coming by. You heard Randy Schaefer's voice there. We will talk to her a little bit later about Facebook cracking down on InfoWars. It seems like the thing to do. A lot of the social media sites have been announcing their crackdown on InfoWars in the past 24, 48 hours. So we'll talk to her about that. A little bit later in the program, Gabriel Scheer comes by. He's the Director of Strategic Development at Lime. We talk a lot about dockless bikes and now scooters in the city of Chicago and around the country. So we'll talk to the horse's mouth, Gabriel, about trying to get dockless scooters here in Chicago a little later in the program. But we start on Mondays with the folks from Chicago Inno, and today the folks is a folk, Catherine Davis in the studio. Jim Dahlke has the week off. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, I want to start with Lime because you've covered them quite a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
The idea is that these dockless bikes, I think they're in 70 markets around the country,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's bikes or scooters. And the question is, it's an interesting dance how these companies get into new cities, whether they're welcomed, whether they, like Bird is their competitor, right? Bird
right.
just drops the bikes.
Yeah.
Or the scooters.
So Bird, yeah, an electric scooter company, and they actually came to Chicago for the first time about 2 weekends ago at the Wicker Park Fest. So they told me that they had notified the city they were coming and that
right.
they were going to be at the Wicker Park Fest, but only there. You know, the Bird scooters are not available anywhere else or like any other times right now in Chicago.
In Milwaukee, I know, they're trying to figure out what to do because they did just drop them, right? You know, up there.
Yeah.
They're all over up there.
So they were banned in Milwaukee for a while, and it looks like they're working, this, you know, local government there is working with them to try to just, you know, put in policies that make them more organized,
right.
you know, like where they can only be ridden in bike lanes, parked in these kind of places, and just kind of making sure the rollout is as best as it can be.
And so you've got two companies with two very different approaches. Bird is a little more blunt. At
yep.
Lime tries to finesse things, and we'll see how it works here in Chicago. We'll talk with Gabriel about that a little bit later. But I mean, it's probably inevitable, right?
Right. I mean, you know, they've come to other cities whether they wanted them there or not, and they found ways to make it
to
work
make it
and
happen.
To stay. So
I'm
sure they'll do no different here.
I've said this before, but my wife and daughter were in L.A. apartment hunting, and they loved them, the scooters mm-hmm. that they used. I don't know if it was Lime there or Bird, which was the company, but yeah, they thought it was great. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Speaking of companies that are in Chicago and Milwaukee, there's this Chicago startup called Sugar, S-U-G-R, which is all about choosing restaurants, right?
Yeah. So this Sugar is a Chicago-built app that they use artificial intelligence to generate and match users with restaurants in Chicago. So they have more than 10,000 restaurants on the platform in the Chicago area.
So I'd be worried, right, if they ended up sending me to White Castle?
Yeah.
Because they'd give me a quiz.
That should not be on there. But, you know, they match users in a Tinder-like style. So I don't know, Steve, if you've ever used Tinder.
I have not, Catherine.
But, you know, you swipe right and left. And so, you know, the Sugar will ask you questions like, do you like spicy food? Yes or no? Are you a night owl or a morning person? Yes or no? And then, you know, asking if you like reservations or if you like something more spontaneous. So, of course, maybe a place that's not as crowded and you can just walk
yeah,
into.
Could be the White Castle.
Right.
Okay, so you talked to the CEO, Ruben Flores Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
He says, in the span of 10 swipes, we can get a very accurate description of who you are as a person.
Yep.
That's kind of scary.
A little scary. But, you know, if you are having a hard time finding a restaurant or if you're new to Chicago, for instance, and don't know where to go, this could really come in handy.
Is this the sort of thing that there's a need for? I mean, it seems like there are a lot of different ways to figure out what restaurants are out there.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, of course, there's Yelp, there's Google reviews. There are ways to, you know, find what's popular. Just ask someone on the street what they where
right,
they like
right.
to go. But, you know, I think that there is a need for this just because people are increasingly doing things, you know, in virtual ways. The other cool thing about Sugar is that they kind of have incorporated some other tech elements. So you can call an Uber through their app. You know, if, once you've chosen a restaurant and you got to get to the West Loop, you can order an Uber through it. You can also pay for your bill using Apple Pay.
We've talked, I don't know if it was in this segment or another one, about there was a company in the travel business where they were trying to incorporate all of these things. You know, they said you buy everything separately, the plane ticket, rent the car, things like that. Was that with you?
Yeah, that was with us. The name is escaping me right now, but
it's okay. I unfairly brought it up. But it strikes me that this is the same sort of thing with dining, where you pick not only the restaurant, you can get there and get home and all of that and pay through this one app.
Exactly. I mean, the convenience is at an all-time high.
They're in Milwaukee. How are they doing up there?
Yeah, so it sounds like Milwaukee's definitely their smaller market. They recently launched there, and they're working to get restaurants on their platform now. So, you know, of course, getting users as well.
So they've got 10,000 restaurants on the Chicago platform.
Mm-hmm,
that's pretty amazing. So, but I'm wondering, does that mean these 10,000 restaurants opted in, or they're just signing
them up? So they pull any public data on restaurants to put on their platform, but the ones that have the Apple Pay capability have to opt into that.
And that's where they make their money, right, is off of Apple Pay?
Yeah. So right now, they're not monetizing this at the moment, but going forward, once
Mom,
they have...
Mom, Dad, I'm not making money right now.
Right. But once they have enough restaurants on there that are using Apple Pay as part of the app, they're going to take a chunk of that transaction.
It's called Sugar, S-U-G-R. And pretty interesting. You know, I think maybe we talked last week. I'm finally using Apple Pay.
Oh, okay.
And
using Apple Pay.
You're not?
No.
Well, let's mark this day. I'm still getting used to the mechanics of all of it, but I think it's going to be great.
You like it?
I do like it.
Do most people take it from what you find?
You know, I know they're supposed to have symbols up. I have a hard time finding the symbols, so I just ask. And it's 50-50.
Gotcha.
But it's quicker than putting your chip in and waiting for it. That's what I like, and it's more secure, I guess.
True.
Tell me, you know, we talk on this show a lot about Tovala, and it's such an intriguing idea and an intriguing company. They're in the news again this week with the pop-up store, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's start from up in the 30,000 feet, though. Tell me about what Tovala is and why we need them.
Right. So Tovala is a Chicago startup that's created a kitchen device that's kind of like a microwave, but not that simple. So basically, their device uses a combination of steam, heat, baking, and broiling to create restaurant-quality meals. So they provide the meals. You can get them delivered to your home. They're $12 a piece. And you scan a barcode. It pulls data from its network and knows exactly how to cook this meal in the Tovala on your kitchen counter.
And it comes out like you would order in a restaurant, they
yes.
say. Yes. And so the beauty of that is you've got nice food, well-prepared food. It does all sorts of different things, all computer-wise through the barcode.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
Right.
The downside is, and I've wrestled with this myself talking about it for the last couple of years, is it's kind of hard to visualize or to discuss, right, or to understand just by explaining it.
Exactly. You know, just seeing this online and, you know, deciding whether or not to drop $300 on it, it's
well,
like,
that's the thing.
I kind of want to see this in person. So a couple of weeks ago, Tovala actually launched a pop-up store in Lincoln Park, and it's open through mid-September, and you can go in there and test out the food, see how the device works, and if you are interested, you can buy one right then.
So I like to walk the aisles of my Whole Foods at lunchtime on Saturdays just to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Can we drop into Tovala and get a free meal? Is that what this is about?
Well, I think you might be able to get a free sample. Not sure about a whole meal, but the idea is that you can test the food and see what it's like.
How are they doing? Do we know?
Yeah, you know, they're doing pretty well. They've raised more than $13 million from big investors like Tyson Foods, the Pritzker Group, and others. They've grown to 34 full-time employees. I mean, they continue to grow. So, you know, we're seeing good things out of them.
And they're getting, like you said, if Tyson's investing or Pritzker's investing, but especially Tyson,
right,
because they're looking for the future of sort of food. And if they think it's a worthwhile idea, it just might be the sort of the thing to come. And that you don't have to buy their food kits, right? I mean, it's probably best if you do, but they've
right.
got recipes too.
Yeah, they also supply recipes to people that own it so that they can use their own ingredients to prepare foods using it. So it's not just, you know, you have to buy their $12 meal kits.
It's kind of like an Instapot, but it starts at a higher end.
A little bit. I think of it more like a fancy microwave, just based on the way it looks. It's got that square design.
Well, fancy microwave is not going to catch on, so that's just not the way they're going to do it. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Catherine Davis is in the studio from Chicago Inno. And tell me about the Inno Minute that we can hear every morning on the opening bell.
Yeah, so the Inno Minute is basically just a 60-second rundown of the day's biggest tech headlines. It runs at 5:25 a.m. every day.
Check out the opening bell. Steve Grzanich hosts that every day from 5 a.m. till 6 a.m. Okay, so you know, we talk on the show a lot about successful exits, right? Startups form a company, they find someone to buy them, and then they cash a big fat check.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be what happened with Spring CM. Talk to me about that.
So Spring CM is a Chicago tech startup. They were founded in 2005, and they basically make a cloud software that helps companies manage sales contracts. And so last week, they were acquired by DocuSign, which is a San Francisco-based tech company that specializes in electronic signatures,
you know?
So when you sign something,
Paying for signing a mortgage or things like that, if you can't be there, use DocuSign.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And so they acquired Spring CM for $220 million last week. Yeah. So, you know, pretty sizable exit for Spring CM. They raised more than $127 million in venture capital funding. So, you know, this is a pretty good payday for investors, founders.
Yeah. And what does it mean for DocuSign? Because this is a little outside of what they do.
Yeah. Well, you know, DocuSign wanted to acquire Spring CM's tech because now it'll allow them to facilitate the rest of the agreement process. Not just the signatures, but the preparing to sign, the managing the documents, the whole process.
So it's like sugar in that you can not just go to a restaurant but pick up an Uber, although it's just much less tasty.
Yeah.
But a lot more money.
Exactly.
All right. There's that DocuSign. And that, so we talked not too long ago about the Agrable, right? That was a big exit in Chicago, or in Illinois, I guess I should say. So this is just sort of the latest sign of that.
Exactly. Yeah, Agrable was acquired by Nutrien for $63 million in July.
All right, tell me about Holberg Financial. We, you know, Elise Glink's on the show every week, and she's behind Best Money Moves. That's a pretty cool company. You know, they look at your financial stress for employees and, you know, figure out methods and things. But that's something that employers can opt into. And it seems like Holberg Financial is a little more limited, but sort of something like that.
Yeah. So Holberg Financial is a Chicago startup operating out of 1871. And what they've done is they've created an online work benefit platform that employers can purchase and provide to their employees that gives them financial guidance. So they're using a combination of like algorithms and data and then also real life financial advisors to help people reach their goals, you know, whether that's paying off student loans or saving for a down payment on a home.
So the idea is it's not just a 401k being made available, but it's a financial advisor.
Exactly, like a wealth manager.
Yeah, so if you want to save up to buy a house or to figure out how to do something like that, different investments, this would come with the job?
Yes, this would be just like a workplace benefit, like any other benefit.
I guess here at Tribune, we've had things similar to that in the past where you have to pay more.
Okay.
Which I don't know if these employees would have to pay more or if I guess that would be up to the individual company.
Yeah, I think it's up to the individual company, but they do pay Holberg $7 per employee per month.
I see.
To use it.
So does this attract younger workers? Is that what this is about? I would imagine maybe the younger workers aren't tuned into this yet.
I think so because, you know, as the job market, you know, gets more competitive and especially among tech startups here in Chicago, having these different workplace benefits really means something. If you're a, you know, computer coder and you could work at any one of these tech companies,
right.
You're like, well, let me work at the one with the best benefits.
All the different.
So,
you know, I'm continually amazed by that. These companies that are moving downtown to get the younger workforce because when they weren't downtown, they weren't hiring just old people, you know. I mean, so it must speak to the competition now to hire these young minds, these agile minds to come in and work. Maybe another example of that is AFN Logistics, right, which is kind of moving downtown, not altogether, but from out of Niles a little bit.
Yeah, so AFN Logistics, they're headquartered in Niles, and they opened a new Chicago downtown office last week that can hold about 70 employees. So they're not closing their Niles headquarters. They're still going to have that office, but they wanted to open one here downtown to attract younger tech talent, you know, people coming out of the universities that want to live in the city, don't want to move out to the suburbs like we've seen in generations before. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they fill up that office. They have plans to hire about 85 people this year.
I would like to see a study. This is something for Chicago, you know, take a week to look at these companies that have moved some offices downtown and kept some up. I don't know that you could get this information, but it'd be interesting to see the differences in the average age. Mm-hmm. If the downtown workforce really is that much younger, or if it sort of stays the same suburb versus city.
Right. Yeah. It would be interesting to see that. I mean, GoGo, if you remember them, the, you know, in-flight Wi-Fi provider, they moved their offices from Itasca to the West Loop last year. And then just in June, Peapod also moved its headquarters to the West Loop.
Right. So maybe you can get hired in one of these companies that are headquartered and have offices in a couple of spots, thinking you're going to work in the Loop. And then they say, sorry, sucker, mm-hmm. it's Park Ridge for you.
Yeah. Depending on who you are, you might not like that.
Well, Park Ridge is nice. Why are you ripping on it like that?
I'm not.
Catherine Davis writes for Chicago Inno. We're going to do the show next week from Park Ridge.
Okay.
Thanks for coming by.
Of course, Steve.
Thank you, Doma T. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. It is 12:37 here on the Biz Lunch. On the phone line is Gabriel Scheer. He is with Lime, the Director of Strategic Development and Government Affairs at Lime. I don't know if you've seen the dockless bikes yet or the scooters, but Lime is here, and I suspect it's getting stronger before the year is out. Gabriel, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, it is. Is it nice to be here in Chicago? Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great market. I think, you know, it has a lot of the things we look for generally, which is to say, you know, really good public transit, but still sort of missing pieces. So first, last mile situations where people don't have the mobility tools they might need, or they might be using a car when the goal is to get people out of cars to get to and from, you know, Metra or whatever it might be that they're taking. And we see a populace that's sort of engaged, that's been asking for it. We get emails and other sort of forms of requests, social media and so forth, from people saying, we'd like to have you here in Chicago. And so we've been seeing a lot of that. And I think that was a good sort of cue for us. We've also seen Divi, which, you know, obviously a great system, but doesn't serve the whole city. So we've seen a lot of people coming in from areas that weren't served by Divi saying, we want this too. So we've really seen a receptive city, I think, for you know, at least from the community side for what we're doing.
Tell me about the scooter experiment or initiation or invitation or tease. I'm not sure what, but five different festivals, right? You've dropped off 20 scooters or so to use them. And I would imagine that's to create demand, but maybe also to show the city of Chicago that you can make it work.
Yeah, I mean, I think you summarized it quite well. We reached out to CDOT in the city, I don't know, it was probably March, and asked about the city's sort of stance on scooters. Obviously, we had been sort of engaged with the city around the bike share pilot in Southside and really wanted to be present kind of across the city, frankly, but with the bikes and the scooters. And I think the city wasn't quite ready for scooters, had felt like they were focused on the bike side of things, and that wasn't something they wanted to take on this year. And so with that in mind, we started working with the aldermen and just trying to figure out where there were pockets, particularly from the community, of desire for scooters and where we were seeing people. You know, a lot of it is someone leaves Chicago, goes to somewhere else, you know, goes to San Diego or goes to one of our other markets where we have scooters. They see them and they come back. And
hey, Gabriel, I've been talking about that. My wife and daughter, I don't know if you're the company in L.A., but my wife and daughter were out there apartment hunting, and they scootered from appointment to appointment. They absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and that's exactly, I mean, that's exactly, yes, we are in LA, and that's exactly what happens, is that people see it somewhere else. We've had a lot of cities who I would say have, I mean, the relationship's been different in every city, but a lot of cities where we operate, they're seeing this as a first, last mile, or in fact, a car replacement solution.
I'm going to interrupt you because there's a lot of ground I want to cover with you. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be rude. But I saw a quote from you in an article where you say, change is challenging for every city. I mean, it's your job to, whether it's in Milwaukee or Salt Lake City, you know, you're the guy to try to get them in here. So tell me about how your strategy then, because I'm sure you want scooters here. You want CDOT to focus on it citywide eventually. How do you get their ear, aside from these small pilot programs, and what's your forecast? Do you think you're going to get to work maybe in the next year or so?
Yes, I mean, I think you nailed it actually in your previous question, which was, are we doing this to kind of show off, get people excited about it, and also show what we can do operationally? And the answer to both of those is yes, that is part of our strategy in terms of how we demonstrate to the city what this could do. We see a lot of cities where it starts out, and the change is hard piece is real, right? Like, this is something that fundamentally is a new thing coming at scale to city streets. And some cities sort of embrace it right off the bat, and they say, you know, this meets our sort of carbon reduction goals, our congestion mitigation goals, our social equity and transportation goals. Some cities are more hesitant. Some cities outright say, absolutely not, we don't want this. And you gave two great examples there. Salt Lake City, I would put in the former camp, where they very much have welcomed this as a potential tool to help them meet some of their climate goals, their carbon goals, their equity goals. Milwaukee has been very different in their response. And, you know, in both cases, sort of scooters came to their cities, and the cities have responded very differently, and I guess I'll leave it at that. But as far as the CDOT side of things, yeah, I would love to say that we'll be live there as soon as possible. You know, we've signaled our intention and our interest to the city and been very transparent, I hope, with CDOT. We've sort of told them ahead of time with all the pop-ups that we're doing, where we're going and what we're doing. In each case, we've had aldermanic support and community support for the events. So we're doing our best to really engage a priori with the city and with all the sort of relevant stakeholders to make sure this is as comfortable as it can be.
As I see it, there's your competitor is Bird, and Bird is in Milwaukee, and they operate differently from you in that Bird sort of invades, and you kind of test the waters and come in a little more slowly. Is that fair?
I won't comment on our competitor. I will say that our approach tends to be as much as possible. We're working with cities in advance,
so
we really try to lay the groundwork.
So has that worked to your benefit, or does I mean all? I mean, if a city says, "Well, Bird is here," they just kind of showed up. This is who we're going to work with. I mean, I would imagine that's a risk you take when it comes to dealing with cities a little bit more deliberately.
Yeah, that's very much a risk we take. I mean, it comes again to sort of how the different cities deal with it. So, you know, obviously you referenced Milwaukee and Bird, and they did show up there, and the city hadn't been expecting them. Although, to be fair, we'd been talking to the city for a while and saying, we think this is going to come to your city, whether you want it or not, and it's time, you know, we'd love for you to proactively engage. And the city had been talking to us, and same in Salt Lake City, actually. We've been talking with the city and our competitor launched there. And, you know, Salt Lake City said, you know what, this wasn't quite how we wanted this launch to go, but we do believe this could add value. And so we're going to quickly turn around a permit as fast as we can. And I think it took 2 to 3 weeks from when Bird launched there to when we all had a permit in hand and we're now operating legally with this, or I shouldn't say legally, because there was not a law
with
preventing
the blessing,
it,
but sort of
operating,
yeah,
with the blessing. Exactly.
Okay, so let's
Milwaukee's taking a different tack.
Yeah, they have. So let's come back to Chicago then. What's going to happen? I mean, do you see them moving soon? I know I kind of asked you this earlier, but I'm just interested in your strategy and your forecast of when these scooters will be in the city, because I feel like it's inevitable. It's just a matter of getting the city to sign on. So when do you think, and how will you make that happen?
I agree with you on thinking it's an inevitability at some level. In terms of how and when, I couldn't tell you. I mean, from our perspective, if the city said go, we could go tomorrow. We're ready to go. We've got a team. We've got scooters. We'd love to be there. The sort of cautionary note I've heard from the city is they'd rather not deal with this year. And so my hope is that by demonstrating what we can do and doing so in a responsible way, that might speed up the timeline. But candidly, that's, you know, it's more the city's court than ours at this point.
Gabriel Shears, the Director of Strategic Development, Government Affairs at Lime. Gabriel, let's talk again when it happens, okay?
That sounds great. Looking forward to it.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Okay, so this one hits home a bit. As you might have heard, we moved to a new station and the old Tribune Tower was bought out to be redeveloped into condominiums. But many Chicagoans were concerned about the fate of the style of the iconic Tribune Tower. Good news, though, is that it was settled that the Chicago Tribune sign on the side of the building will stay there after the renovations are complete, which is expected to be around 2020. Who knows, maybe that'll bump up the home values a bit, as if they need to be any more expensive. And speaking of homes, you need an Airbnb? Well, 19,000 Lollapalooza goers did after this last weekend's festival, and it provided a huge payout for hosts. The surge from the festival demand provided Airbnb hosts an average of $465 for the weekend for short-term rental. It was expected to bring in roughly $3.3 million for the market, and about 4,000 guests were scheduled to stay in the Southside neighborhoods like Bronzeville, Pilsen, and Woodlawn alone. This Airbnb thing sure is a cash cow. No kidding. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, right here on 720 WGN. Randy Schaefer is in the studio, a digital editor at the Chicago Tribune. She comes by on most Mondays to talk what's what in social media. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve.
So if I am Alex Jones, the guy behind InfoWars, am I feeling under attack today?
Ooh, you probably are, especially if you're watching what's going on Facebook.
Which is only fair because he's put everyone else under attack for a long time.
I think that's a safe assumption.
Tell me about InfoWars and why we care.
So you actually sent me this piece earlier today, but Facebook and YouTube today joined Apple in removing all of Alex Jones' InfoWars content from their platforms.
So Facebook had banned Alex Jones as an individual earlier, but not his pages.
Right, and so it unpublished, air quotes, unpublished four pages that were related to InfoWars.
And Alex Jones is the guy behind the sort of the Pizzagate scandal that resulted in a guy showing up.
Right, the Sandy Hook conspiracy theory, those kind of things,
and,
yeah.
And really despicable conspiracy sorts of theories, things. And if there's anyone, if there's sort of a case maybe for someone who should be looked at, it's what he puts up there, I would think.
Right. And, you know, the funny thing is that Facebook, being a private company, is completely entitled to take down whatever they feel. And so they did. And they said that the pages violated their, air quotes again, community standards.
Right. And so they haven't accused him of hate speech or anything like that, but just community standards.
Yes, community
standards. Too many strikes, they said, but they haven't told us how many strikes is too many. In baseball, you get three strikes. I don't know how many you get in Facebook.
Facebook hasn't really disclosed that.
All right, so we've got InfoWars out, off on Apple as well. Spotify removed them. And I have not seen, and I don't know that you've seen a response from him today.
I haven't, although to be fair, I don't generally go out of my way to look at what Alex Jones is saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's something to follow, I'm sure. Okay, while we're on the topic of Facebook, we've talked before, I think, about the fact that they want to get into the matchmaking business, the dating business.
Facebook
right?
wants to get into the every business.
I suppose they do, yeah. Tell me about this dating. It's not a separate app, right? Which is kind of
no,
part of the story.
They're building it right into the app that already exists. And so this isn't new. At its conference earlier this year, F8, Facebook said it planned to get into the dating game. But this 9to5 Mac story has a little more information about how this is going to be built into regular Facebook and users can opt in.
And so if you opt in, that's sort of the way out of everything, right? They say, well, you opted in, so now we can do whatever
we want. Yeah, and, you know, I'm really interested to see how this is going to work because the story said there's no swiping and users get a certain number of users that they can interact with. So I'm intrigued. Not enough to try it, but I want to know what it's going to look like.
So tell me, what do we know about how it will work? You go to your homepage and there's something you can click on?
I'm assuming it's going to be built into the app, you know, with Marketplace and those annoying notifications I can't get to go away. Now, maybe just more annoying notifications.
But again, you're not going to be hit on by people because you would have to...
Yeah, you have to manually go in and enact and say that you're interested in using us.
So this is not something... how do I ask this question? So do you think it's going to be popular?
You know, Facebook stories aren't popular, but you never know.
I guess a different way to say that is, with whom do you think this would be most popular?
Well, Facebook, at least my news feed, seems to be a lot of my parents' age friends, so maybe...
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be too popular among millennials or, you know, the generation below ours, but maybe older generations. They're already there, you know.
They're already on Facebook.
Exactly.
Right? They're already swinging it there, so... What was the company that was kind of discovered to be... They exaggerated their numbers where you could line up an extramarital affair. Do you remember that?
Oh, no, I don't. I know what you're talking about, but right. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Maybe Facebook will become the more legitimate version of that. Could there be a more legitimate version? I'm not sure.
More legitimate Facebook.
You know, I need to look at Facebook less often. Is there anything, Randy, is there anything that will help me do that?
Actually, yeah, Facebook can, Steve.
Oh, Facebook is going to help me break from Facebook?
Facebook is going to try to help you break from Facebook.
That sounds difficult to believe.
It does. So this Wall Street Journal piece that I sent over said, Facebook is trying to put in new tools that will let you know, and Instagram as well, how much time you spend on those apps. And then if it's reached your threshold, whatever that may be, you can stop receiving notifications.
So you set, say, I want to look at Facebook no more than 18 hours a day.
Yes.
And then after 18 hours, a little gizmo comes up and says, hey, you've reached your limit.
Maybe go to sleep, read a book.
Right. Go for a walk or something like that.
Something like
but
that.
But it only works on one device at a time, or explain that for me.
Yeah, I was a little unclear about that. But of course, I am also on Facebook probably an unhealthy like 60 to 90 hours a week.
Yeah.
So I don't think I would get too much use out of that tool.
Right. So if you're like, it measures what you'd be on your phone.
Right.
But not what you'd be on your laptop, or measure them individually, I
right.
guess. So
right? Or if you have them open at the same time, which I often do on three computers,
two phones. Do not, do you?
Yeah, work computer, personal computer, work phone, personal phone. Steve, I'm an addict. I need help.
Well, you've never had plastic surgery, right, to help you look more like your Instagram post?
I have not, no.
Is this really a thing?
This is a thing. And I sent you this CNET story, but I've actually seen it published multiple places today where, you know, people used to go in and they'd be like, oh, you know, like, I want Jennifer Aniston's hair. Well, now they say, I want my Snapchat face.
That's amazing to me. So they've been taking pictures of themselves, falsely portraying themselves on Instagram.
Yeah, these fun Snapchat filters or Instagram filters.
And now they want to be made to look like the people they've created on Instagram.
It's scary, isn't it?
Is this really a thing?
This is really a thing.
And what do they do about it?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I'm sure it depends on how much money said plastic surgeon wants to make and how young said patient could be. But yeah, it's kind of scary, this altered reality we're all living
based in. Based on an article in JAMA. So JAMA gives it some credibility, Journal of American Medical Association.
Yeah.
Randy Schaefer, come back next week, but be just the way you are.
I will have the same face, I promise.
All right, that's Randy Schaefer, digital editor at the Chicago Tribune.